Hey, Jay just hit start, and he's Jay Leesk, and I'm Hunter Willis, and this is Buzzkill, the podcast that we're doing together. We're tackling some of the harder aspects of digital transformation, end user adoption, and other things that organizations face when they're moving applications to the cloud and processes to more of a digital workplace, as opposed to having things based on servers and working in a more traditional IT-based and collaboration-based model. So, Jay, it's a pleasure to do this. Thank you so much for bringing me onto this. Really appreciate it. And I'm glad that we're finally jumping into this podcast.
Yeah, I'm really jazzed. The intro video we did is kind of a joke to ourselves just to kind of get it going and understand what we want to talk about. That really got me excited about the ability to just talk about some of these problems we're having. I'm doing the technology side with Craig, another podcast that's part of the On the Podcast On the Spot Network. And I'm really excited to talk about some of the softer skills and really get into you said digital transformation. You talked a little bit about it, but really this is about modernizing your IT capabilities to meet your future mission needs. And the crisis we're in right now, the pandemic and so many knowledge workers working from home is a prime example of how important it is to get as ahead of this as you can so that when something happens, you have a system that can be flexible for your workers.
Yeah, absolutely. So the topic we're going to tackle today as part of this is going to be change management, right? What are the things that some of the organizations need to keep in mind? And just having a loose conversation around some of the challenges with that and some of the kind of points to keep in mind as part of change management, both for, especially, we're going to be talking about what's going on right now with COVID, but also in general, in the future, and as organizations move down the road with their processes for modernization. And again, the end goal to all of this, of course, is productivity for the organization, right? You're investing in tools to make things easier for users to do so they can find what they need, get the job done easier, and ideally make it also easier for IT to maintain those tools and less expensive for the organization as a whole in the long run, or at least at bare minimum, easier to plan for with the budget, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 10 years ago, an IT organization would drop a big sum of money. They would get ownership in perpetuity of this of enterprise software like SharePoint. And then every year they'd spend a little bit, like a small percentage of that, on maintenance. And the goal was install the software, tell the users where that software can be accessed, and walk away and do minimize the amount of support you're providing. In fact, I was at one of the national labs, which run in partnership with the DOE. I was out there and I was doing a workshop specifically preparing them for Office 365. And the CIO pulled me aside afterwards and said, my number one takeaway is I need to hire business analysts. Over the last 3 to 5 years, he had removed all of the cost center roles that he could remove and kept the subject matter experts on the technologies because they were required to solve the support tickets, but he didn't have budget and justification for budget to have someone whose job it was to look at a piece of technology and look at a mission or business requirement and figure out how to marry those together. And that's a huge part of being successful nowadays. You're spending maybe less upfront, but more year to year. You're getting a more rapid release of products and capabilities. And the mission and the business requirements are changing at a much more rapid pace as well. And if you don't have a plan for how do you plan for change, how do you announce change, how do you train for change, then you're stuck. You're going to be in the same position 3 years from now when nobody's adopted what you purchased and you're looking at a new technology set because what you have doesn't solve your needs. Well, how can you know?
Yeah, and Jay and I, in the jobs that we're in, we do solutions engineering and solutions architecting, and I have in the past as well. We talk to hundreds of customers essentially, and this is what we're coming to the table with, right? We're not doing this because it's like, hey, we saw a couple of examples of this, and this is something that we see time to time. It's endemic. It's something that almost every single time we talk to a customer, there's invariably a huge need for these softer skills and communication and coordination within the organization to manage change. And the response of the organization is frequently that there's no budget for it or that nobody's really in charge of that. So IT just has to do the best they can with what they've got and the time that they have. And of course the IT departments are typically like, well, we're already like slammed. Like,
yeah,
this whole thing is an extra project already. We can't have an extra project added to our extra project. Right.
Yep.
So the point though, is that again, what we're highlighting here is the fact that in order for this to be successful, the change management and the plan of how the solution is rolled out, no matter what it is or any change that's happening, is equally, and in some cases it's more important than the software itself. Because, and the reason I say it like that is because if you're investing in new software before your users are already efficiently using what they have, right? Yeah. May need to stop that situation and take another look at it, right? Maybe that's not where the money needs to be spent.
Well, after you invest in my software, then you can stop doing
right.
that.
And right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But no, you're right. It's the problem is in understanding what the actual needs are and how does technology tie to those needs. Then we can start to enhance the solutions that our teams have. I spent 5.5 years at Booz Allen doing technical requirements and project management for the federal government. And every project I walked into, the first thing we talked about was, what are your requirements? Well, I would get a list of the system shall, the tool must, and I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Just like normal people speak about.
Right. I'm like, how do these system requirements tie to the needs of your end users? And in every case, I get almost a blank stare of either, why are you asking this? Or what do you mean I'm supposed to have that information? Or how do we even go about asking that question? Most of my federal customers were in the tens of thousands of people. So how do you get from the end users, what are their roadblocks to being successful? How do you get what would make your job easier? How do you get, I think these are actually good places to start, right? Like, how do you understand what does the end user actually need to be successful?
So I've heard this use case from multiple people from Booz Allen's own internal way that they've managed some of this in the past, right? I don't know what they're doing right now. They could be completely different. But it's been laid out to me by three different people in specifics how they brought people from their marketing team in to gather the requirements from users from different departments and then bring those requirements to IT. And they used a third-party department that's great at communication and great at talking about how great stuff is, right, to two different groups of people. And by having this third-party translator, number one, you kind of have a moderator between the fight of the endless fight and the endless dramatic fight between end users and IT, right? And you also have people that are good at communication, handling the communication part of things, right? Instead of having the people that are very technical doing their technical stuff and the people that are focused on their jobs and just want to get productive with the tools they need, instead of having to deal with whatever's, you know, trying to be forced on them by the organization, is how they see it a lot, right? And that's in and of itself is a challenge, is that perception. And when you have someone that's good at communication and good at handling, you know, people's objections and just having conversations, sitting down and listening to people and those kinds of softer skills, right? It's a lot easier to get people to understand. This is a big, big portion of all of this. What's in it for them, right? What's in it for me as a user? Why should I care about this thing that you're saying I should be doing? Why should I even spend time talking to this person asking me what requirements are, right?
Yep. Yeah, the with him, the what's in it for me philosophy is huge. You have to, when you are rolling out a new product, you have to have a method to help people understand the value. And in order to understand that value, you have to understand what their problems are. And in order to understand what their problems are, so there's a few different approaches that I've taken in the past 8 or 9 years to figure that out. One of those is surveys. SurveyMonkey exists for a reason as a tool. Microsoft has created a forms platform for gathering input for a reason in Office 365.
You can put forms in Teams too.
Yes, you can. So all right, go ahead. Having a tool to send out kind of a generic, generic is actually the wrong term, but sending out a what do you need call that you can gather from the masses is really helpful. One key on that though is, you know, those open-ended survey questions are helpful in understanding an individual's need, But if you send an open-ended survey, questions, you know, with where people are expected to write a lot, first of all, not a lot of people are going to respond. Second of all, you're most likely just going to get the negatives. And third, there's no way to actually quantify that. So when you're building a survey like that, the first thing I always say is make sure your questions are purposeful. Try to make them so they're not leading, so that you're not leading towards a specific answer. But then make sure that you're giving multiple choice questions, which allow you to understand across tens of thousands of people, hey, we're seeing this pattern, this trend from people, because they're all giving the same, they're all answering off of something you can report on rather than something you have to interpret.
Yeah, and that reporting is key too. And this is something else that I want to touch on here, is that there's two things in my mind right now. And one is that as you're looking at this stuff too, you're creating forums, you're trying to, you know, Microsoft has this great recommendation that you build like a community group, right, of people, mm-hmm. where there's like a forum and people can, you can have your power users answer questions and ask questions to, yes. IT. IT interacts with power users, and then also bringing in stakeholders and just regular users into that as well to kind of float some ideas, right? Find out what people's pain points are, but not in a completely open forum setting, in a community where it's understood, hey, we're trying to be positive, we're trying to answer questions and solve problems. So, and to that end, right, the bigger picture is that community should not be part of a project. It needs to be something, right. that exists in the organization. These forums should not be approached with a project mentality. And change management, I think that we're just now in an age where it's really starting to become recognized how frequently things are changing, even when it comes to organization-wide practices and software and collaboration techniques. And I can't emphasize this enough. The change is coming, and we all know it, right? And
yes.
Change, one of the reasons it's called buzzkill is because people don't like talking about this change. Users don't like change. IT doesn't like dealing with change, right? It's coming, and you can deal with stuff. Like, you can plan for change, and the way you plan for change is not having to like set aside everything that you're supposed to be doing on a day-to-day basis dealing with some giant project. It's, look, we need to have a mentality of change. We need to plan and have change management be part of our process inherently to everything that we're doing, right? So mm-hmm. you have a venue and a channel to push out changes to your organization as they come and help the organization alleviate the pains of change as it goes. Because users, you know, the organization doesn't want change. They don't like change. And this is one of the biggest, I mean, that's why the whole field is called change management, right? Because it's a pain and you've got to manage it. And the more that you can make it an easy process and something that's expected by the organization and the people that you're trying to work with, the better. So yeah. The other thing I wanted to touch on is, to Jay's point, right? And one of the reasons that surveys and these community groups are a really good idea is that the one thing that's happened, especially with Teams and cloud-based collaboration software, you can start to get analytics as to how much people are using these platforms.
Yes.
And like the Microsoft 365, Office 365 also has, if you have a Power BI license, there's a Power BI adoption pack, right? It's a free tool.
Yep.
Pop it into Power BI, it tells you how much everybody's using everything, right? My analytics with Microsoft, and listen to this, okay? This is really important to understand. Microsoft, when my analytics is now opened up to a whole lot of sets of users, especially in like the E3 licenses, but it used to only come with E5s. And the way that they would pitch this with the E5 licenses, you can tell how productive your users are being and correlate that to an increase in productivity for your organization. And mm-hmm. this is key, being able to prove that your organization is making more money because of the software, right? That's the only way to get the organization to understand the root to all of this stuff. And every single piece of buzz about IT software that you see online is tied back to this point. IT is an investment. It's not an expense.
Yeah.
It is an investment. It's not an expense. And we have to pivot to that. So bringing all these thoughts that I'm spitting out here and taking up too much time talking while Jay's giving me an impatient look here. The point of everything I'm saying right now is that these surveys, the communities, and all of this, and you managing this change management process is part of the proof to the organization and to your stakeholders that you are bringing value to the organization.
So let me tie what you're saying back to where we were, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about IT being an investment. If you have a one-time survey then you know that at that one point in time, this was the snapshot of my organization. This is what people were using. This is what they liked. This is the hurdles they were having. But if you go make an investment, if you're working the stock market, not that I spend a lot of money there because I'm really kind of scared of it. But frankly, if you're working the stock market, you don't look at a graph of corporate stock performance once. You don't put your money in and then walk away and never look again. You come back maybe daily, maybe weekly, maybe monthly, depending on your investment portfolio and how you're doing it, to figure out is my gamble working. So if you're buying a piece of software and you have a community champions group, that's a way to get a daily, a monthly check, a pulse on how is this going? What kinds of questions are we seeing? So this is something you want to engage in. If you do a monthly or biannual survey of your end users you don't want to inundate them, right? But if you have a well-worded question with answers that are meaningful, that help them see meaning, you can find out, is this investment, is this digital transformation that I'm trying to make with my organization, is it working? You can, of course, you can look at the numbers. You can look at the cost versus the income you're bringing in and the profit. But you also need that pulse on your users to find out, are they happy with how they're doing it? Because frankly, happy users are going to be more likely to have a good long-term success. Are the tools we're giving them meeting their needs? So you get that survey in place. You're not running a survey once. This goes back to your project thing, right? You're not running a survey once. You're running a survey on a regular basis. Maybe it's rolling. So if you're 20,000 users and you hit, let's say, 2,000 users a month, then across a year, you've asked everyone, but you've hit a representation of users each month. And that way you can see what's the trend in these answers.
How many people are actually answering the form?
Yeah,
right. Are you engaging with your organization? No, it's to say that if that number is increasing, right, then you're getting better engagement. It's just like social media, right? If the first time you send out that form, 10 people answer it, well, guess what? Then you go buy some of the managers' cups of coffee, have conversations with them, you know, have a pizza party for a department that is, you know, showing good productivity numbers and adoption of the software, right? Well, they get a pizza party. There's something in it for them beyond just the productivity itself. You start to have that software communication, build those relationships. And I understand that's a hard thing for a lot of IT people, right? There's a lot of introverts in this industry, and the stereotype is, you know, not social. And I think that as time is going on, though, we're seeing that stereotype break a bit, which is great. But again, going back to like the internal conflict between like users and IT, the more you can do to soften that, the more you can relationship build, get stakeholders to understand what's in it for them. If you can find power users, I've said this before, but like a power user can be worth multiple IT employees. If you have people embedded in the organization that are passionate about tech and helping people, you know, and in my mind, this is like 1-3% of the employees in any organization. It's a very small number. But even just a few of them can really help ameliorate this change management process and make it so that, you know, people are having conversations. There's, you know, and I've seen organizations where there's like younger people that are really passionate about tech that like people are asking questions to. They go around, show them how to do the thing, even though it's not official, right? And they may get a gift card or something like that from the organization. Yep. Everybody says, hey, thanks so much for doing that. And they get a shout out and this kind of thing. But those kinds of people should be encouraged. They should be recognized by IT. They should have a special place in these community groups, right? Or any part of an engagement, brought in, get their feedback, ask them what people are talking about in the organization. Like, you know, are people at the water cooler talking positive about tech or negative?
And right.
Going back to Booz Allen, it's not always negative. Right. There's an impression when we talk to IT people, there's an impression that end users are never going to be happy with tech. But there are organizations, and believe me, it's true. Right. There's organizations where people love their IT teams and people love the tech they work with. There's not a ton of them. I grant that. And I recognize that in a lot of organizations, that seems like a crazy pipe dream talk that nobody will ever believe. But you can get there, and it's a true thing.
All right. So we've talked about the broad way of getting getting information from your users, the idea of a survey, the idea of an initial survey, but also following it up. I really like that you brought in the champions group is what I tend to refer to it as. The combination of power users, people you give early access to technology, but also people that you kind of grant that role of you're not an admin, you're not a help desk, but people like talking to you and you like helping them. Therefore, we're going to give you a little extra recognition, that early access, a gift card to Starbucks every once in a while. We'll have a webinar just for your group so that you guys can know what the roadmap looks like for releases, stuff like that. That's a good way to engage them. Do you have any other good thoughts on how do you IT engage your end users throughout the life cycle of your project, of your product,
For the IT people that are just getting started with these ideas, right, and the organizations that are resistant to these kind of softer things, right, you know, the CTO is saying there's no budget for any of this and you can't have anybody else to do it. And you could say like, well, look, maybe even if the IT department, everybody pools in $3 each to buy two pizzas for the department that has the most adoption, right, that can get you serious recognition in the organization. And that's a good place to start. And it's one of the when you go out there and you look at kind of tools to get people excited about things and incentives, a pizza party or like cake, people love food, right? Every organization I've been at, a little party can really brighten spirits no matter what's going on. So food is a great place to start. Have a pizza party for a department that has the most adoption or the people that are engaging the most with IT about these ideas, right? Yeah. Another step again is to, and again, this involves a little bit of cash, right? But pizza parties and then coffee for people, right? Or finding a way to have positive meeting interactions for like managers and stakeholders to have those conversations. Those are both two really great places to start. See if you can make a friend that you didn't have before, even if it's kind of like there might have been a little bit of a sore past, right? Find a way to make amends. These are soft
really
things
that
have
there.
To be gotten over, right? I mean, I've done this kind of stuff and it's tough, right? And it's tough to take somebody that you've butted heads with a bunch of times and be like, all right, well, now I recognize I have to figure out their perspective. So going in there with a cup of coffee. And the goal here is, yes, it's good to be a good person and a nice person and make friends, but really for the organization to succeed, this is necessary, right? People have to understand, because you're not just making a friend, they're making a friend too. They're understanding that IT is people, right? It's people that want to help people. It's our jobs to help all of the users and the people in the organizations be more successful. And everybody wants this to happen as easy as possible. And coffee and friendly conversations are pretty easy, usually.
Sometimes.
Depending. Sometimes, right? So those are two great places to start with this, I think.
So we talked about the end users and the champions. Let's talk about IT a little bit, because that's another thing. You know, we're used to rolling out software, and the success criteria are really technical. Servers are up, software is installed, I can access it from everywhere on my network, I'm good. When we start talking about things like information architecture, the conversation is often very focused on, well, what are my departments? But if this is another area that actually IT is usually part of, that you can start to look at the end user perspective as well. So if you're doing an information architecture, one of the things that we talk about is, what types of workspaces do you need? Oh, well, I need a SharePoint site. No. Why do you need a SharePoint site? What kind of collaboration are you doing? Are you sharing with people outside your organization or inside your organization? That's two different types of workspaces. Are you sharing confidential information? Are you sharing project-based information, which usually has a start date and an end date? Are you a department? So these types of thoughts from an information architecture perspective allow you to start thinking from the end user, what do I need to be successful? What tools do I need to be able to accomplish my job? Do I need, for example, let's go back to Office 365 for a minute. There's a lot of tools in Office 365, Yammer, Teams, SharePoint, Stream, Power Automate, Power BI, and so many more, right? If I know that I'm looking at a project space with a start date and an end date, What do projects all have in common? Tasks. So I know they're probably going to need some form of project management. So maybe I throw Planner into their default template. I know that because they have an end date or a contract date, I know when I need to recertify that membership is required. And so by starting to look at the business side and how they want to work, you can start to identify what kinds of controls do I need? How can I encourage them to work the way I want them to work? If I want them to stay in my network and I know there's a project management tool, I want to give them access to it and probably training to it so that they don't go outside the network and store everything on monday.com or Trello. So you want to have, if you want that kind of control, you also have to understand, well, what do they need?
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes like, there's this question, right? Is like, how do you know what governance policies that you're going to need to implement? At AvePoint, kind of one of our drumbeats is that we're trying to implement governance. And I feel like we do a very good job of implementing governance without hindering collaboration, right? Balancing collaboration and control so that the end users can get what they need, right? But the organization doesn't lose control of what's happening. And the question that you have to ask yourself is, you know, any organization is going to need governance policies, and any organization needs a way to implement them, enforce them, and monitor and manage them over time, right? So As we're looking at an implementation and as you're looking about change management, if you come up with some, you know, theoretical governance policies and try to apply them to your organization, it's not going to work out too great, right?
Right.
And it goes back to what we've been talking about this whole time. How am I going to know how to implement this, right? How am I going to know which project teams want Planner in their template, right? Or which project teams may need additional tools, third-party integrations, right? How may I know which project teams may have a third-party app that should be organized, authorized by the organization and connected to teams for their use and which ones not? And how am I going to understand how organizations are using teams to collaborate together and what kind of information is stored in Office 365 or whatever collaboration platform I'm going to use? And The answer to all of those questions is got to talk to the end users.
Yeah.
Got to talk to all these relationships. Absolutely. You're not going to know. And until you engage stakeholders and until you engage some actual end users, because managers don't only know what their end users are doing. You know what I'm saying? So until you actually do that, you're not going to know. And the more you know, right? The better off you're going to be, the more you can plan. And a great question I like to start these conversations off with is, you may have some governance ideas. You guys may have like a handbook in your organization that's like, these are our governance policies. And you go in, you try to use what's in Office 365 to implement those or whatever native tool you're using. Right. And you have to ask yourself the question, what's this going to look like in 6 months? What's it going to look like in 2 years? Right. If you aren't doing this as finite as you possibly can, and you're not trying to anticipate the needs of the organization, and you're not doing it on a continuous basis, revise, wash, rinse, and repeat. Right. If you're not doing it on a continuous basis, then it's going to look like chaos in 6 months to a year. And it doesn't matter what collaboration platform you're using. We keep mentioning Office 365. Jay and I are in the Office 365 space. But again, a lot of this and the part of the point of this podcast is to be a little bit more of a broader audience focus, right? Because it really, this can apply to so many different things. I have a brother that's in the networking space, and a lot of these principles apply to networks and the same level, right? You change the network, the language just a little bit, and it applies. They're ubiquitous principles.
So Hunter, we talked about surveys and champions groups, and those are the surveys, again, broad audience. The champions groups, those are your super users, your power users, your trusted representatives. But I like that word representatives, right? So one of the things we do when we do governance workshops with our customers is I want a representative group of people that I can talk to ask questions. I want to talk to line workers or, you know, the people who are in the field doing the work on a daily basis. I want to talk to leadership because I want to understand their goals and their roadblocks and what problems they're having. I want to talk to whoever bought the software because I want to understand I bought the software for this reason. And to me, this is a definition of success. I want to talk to the people that managed the old software. because they know what worked and what didn't work for that platform, and therefore they're going to have some insight into what I'm doing here. So surveys for the broad conversation, champions groups for, you know, getting the information out, but also kind of getting a little bit of back alley. Oh yeah, this is happening. Okay. And then representative stakeholders that I talk to on a, I don't want to say this is not an all the time basis, but like if you're spinning up to purchase software or you're spinning up to solve a problem, that's a good time to find a representative stakeholder group to ask questions to.
So a lot of you are probably thinking at this point, wow, this all sounds great.
Never going to happen.
Right? Like too theoretical, too much change of operations and all these things, right? So here's the challenge to you. And this is something that we work with organizations to do as well. There is one thing that most C-levels understand very, very well, and that is budget math. Okay. They understand that usually. They can look at a budget and be like, all right, how is this going to work? What can we expend? What can we get rid of? Where do we need to spend money? What's going to work out best? Right.
Right.
Typically. And so something that is really an acquired skill that you're going to have to learn to implement this stuff, you need to be practice a little bit of money math, talk to an accountant friend if you have one or someone in your organization that can help you out with this. Second skill, sales.
Yeah.
Everyone is in IT is a sales person, right? So you're selling your solutions and what you're trying to get done to the end users to prove to them that it's going to make things better. And where I'm going with this is you've got to be able to show the organization that it's going to pay off, and you got to be able to put numbers behind it, right? And so drawing up a budget that shows not just how much money something can save in the future, which is very theoretical and that's usually dismissed by people, but show people kind of how much the pain points that you have right now are costing time. For instance, if you can put together a chart of how much time your team is spending maintaining legacy software that people are barely using, that the organization has deemed a priority because we can't move off this yet, right? Put it together in a chart. Show them how much budget hours that is and how much that's actually costing the organization as far as manpower, right?
So, that's a really good starting point. If you go to your help desk and look at the categories for tickets in your help desk, I guarantee it's categorized. You can now identify what are the common problems we're having, who are they happening to, and at the very least, average labor rate, how much are those problems costing us?
Right.
And
not just from the help desk perspective. Sorry to jump in there, Jay. Not just from the help desk perspective, but if you send out a user form that says something with softer language that's like, hey, users, how much of a pain is it to file an IT ticket? And how much of a pain is it to find the stuff you need? Oh, boy. They are going to love telling you that, right?
Yeah.
Put it together, right? Show them how much time are they even willing. Well, maybe not the raw data, right? But I'm just saying, like, you can take an estimate of the amount of time from responses from a survey like that and show the organization, look, you know, I've seen there's a lot of so Gartner has like two or three reports out there on this. There's Forrester reports on it. McKinsey has like a big paper on this and a whole stream of content that came from that paper. The number that everybody is using is that about 20% of the time of end users is spent looking for information. And most organizations, as of the end of 2018, the survey and the big study that McKinsey did said that most organizations had actually seen a temporary reversal in productivity with digital transformation. And that only 15% of organizations they surveyed were like, hey, yeah, this has been great. We've increased productivity. And you know why? Because of the change management, right? Yeah. So making the case to the organization that investing time and energy into doing this is a good thing and it needs to be done to improve those productivity numbers, if you can collaborate that and kind of pull that data together, can be very, very convincing.
Yeah, I'm on board. Yeah, so if you're having a hard time getting someone to agree, go survey the users, or getting someone to agree, go build a champions group, or getting someone to agree, meet with a group of stakeholders. Find some data. And the help desk, it's not that I want the number of hours the help desk is doing something, but if you can identify, you can extrapolate, right? If you can identify that we get 150 data retrieval requests, or I deleted my content, please bring it back to me requests, right? You can probably figure out, A, how much time is the help desk spending on it? B, how much time is the end user losing with that data loss? That's a number you can get and bring to leadership right off the bat without having to interview people to get you started in identifying a change process, to get you started in identifying a problem that you can be solved with technology as long as there's a plan for how to implement it.
And again, this does not have to be your responsibility, right? The goal here is not, we're not saying like, hey, what you need to do is go prove to management that you need to handle all the change management for your organization.
Oh gosh, no.
That's not it, right? The goal is, you know, get some stakeholders in on this with you. Get some people, buy somebody in marketing a cup of coffee, right? Buy somebody in these departments a cup of coffee, or just try to have some nice conversations with them. Win some friends and get some buy-in on it before you do this stuff, right? Get a posse together. And, you know, you might even want to have them present pieces of information from their perspective if you can get them to that point to show that this is going to be super beneficial to the organization. Because if you guys manage it all together, right, or you have, for instance, again, I love the idea of marketing helping with the IT change management, because number one, it's a really solid case study and it worked out really well for Booz Allen. And number two, just having those people do the communication they're supposed to be doing communication is a really fabulous idea, right? So, it's a theoretical in a sense, but we've seen it work from the front end of this, what we're talking about, right? We've seen this work time and time again when we're in organizations. When we have conversations with IT people about how to improve their processes and do workshops with them, things like this, one of the exercises that we have to go through is like, look, you know, the IT people love the things that we're talking about, and they're like, how can we make it real? And one of the places that we start is like, we need to put together some numbers. What are you guys spending on X, Y, and Z, right? What does your budget look
That's
like?
Right.
How can we help those numbers? Because if there's no budget, right, if there's no resources, then nothing's going to change.
So this conversation truly, especially with long-winded people like Hunter and I, this conversation could go on and on and on. So let me
have an idea.
Summarize.
Let's do a webcast series about it and call it Buzzkill, because people don't like to talk about this stuff.
So let's kind of summarize where we are. The first thing is good. You need change management to be successful with technology. The second thing is if you don't have change management, and I'm going backwards here, a good way to start a practice for that is identifying how much money are we wasting on improperly deployed technology. Go to your help desk and find out what those categories of tickets are and run some numbers, and you will find a cost center, not in help desk, but in lost productivity that you can start to build your initial change management. I'm going to call it a project because initially it will be a project that you can build that initial case study. Once you have that, you want to find a way to interact with the users. A survey is a really good way to get a broad spectrum of data. And be able to, but just make sure that the questions you're asking are something you can quantify. How many people are getting this answer?
Radial buttons.
Yes, absolutely. Selections, not typing. You want to ask a typing at the end to get a general feel? That's cool. Just realize every handwritten response you're going to have to analyze. And if you have no budget for change management, spending time analyzing those questions is going to be really hard.
That's a problem to start, right?
So talk to the end users, identify a group of stakeholders that you can start with and do some representative analysis. Those stakeholders should not all be from the same department. They should not all be from the same level in your company. They should not all be in the same role. They should give you representation. Get someone who's in the C-suite, but then get someone not reporting up to that C person who's in the admin team, because they know all the problems the C-suite are really having, and they're probably taking care of half of them. Get someone who's in the mailroom if you have one. Get someone who's in IT. Get that representation of levels and roles to be able to start getting different voices in the room to tell you what's happening. And I guarantee that first group, those are people that are going to want to be your champions. They're going to want to help you form that champions group because now they have inside access to what you're doing. They have early access to the technologies that you're looking at. They're already people that people are going to with problems and asking for solutions. Therefore, they're going to want to disseminate. No. I know this problem happens all the time, but look what IT is talking about doing. And have a method with them for understanding what I'm telling you today is something you should share with others. What I'm telling you today is in total draft form and may never happen. Don't share it. So have that method of communication. So with these, you can start down the path of a proper change management practice.
Yep, absolutely. And the last thing I want to add to this is that I've said the word theoretical a few times. Yeah. I should point out, and I want to clarify, that some of this is theoretical, and the concrete strategy of like using marketing to go back and forth and some of these communication techniques are theoretical, but there are 1,000 examples of organizations and IT people posting on social media about how great a pizza party works. That is not theoretical. Yes. Budget, yes. Putting together budget proposals and trying to show people how things work with money is something that Jay and I have both done many, many times, and it works famously well. If not to actually seal the deal, to at least get people thinking and start shaking heads and changing minds a little bit. And yes. The last thing I'll say is that the rest of this, I mean, everything we've talked about today is stuff that we've seen in practice work, right? We're putting it together and it's kind of a teaching moment and everything, but you need to understand that this is stuff we've seen happen. These are things and concepts we've seen work. If you look, a resource for you, to everybody listening, AvePoint has a lot of great resources and topics around these kind of concepts on their blog and in their resources section. There's also a free certification course through Microsoft and edX online called the Service Adoption Specialist, and you totally should check that out. It's got a lot of great resources and even like surveys that you can put together for your end users to kind of keep tabs on adoption as things are rolling out in your organization. I would point out, though, I don't think it's quite in line with exactly what I'm talking about, but it's very, very close, and it's probably the closest thing that is a solid and especially like a free resource that's out there right now, and you can actually get that certification. So to wrap up here, because we're getting over an hour, really appreciate everybody who's listening to this. We thank you for tuning in. My name again, Hunter Willis, and this is Jay Leese. We're both very approachable on social media. We also both work for AvePoint Inc. So check out AvePoint. Check out our social media profiles. Don't be afraid to approach us and ask questions. We're happy to talk to you. And yeah, really appreciate you tuning in today. Jay, you want to add anything as a conclusion?
No, because I'm on mute. Yes, definitely. First of all, Hunter, thank you. This was a blast, and I really look forward to digging into these in the future. As you can tell, if you've actually made it through this entire conversation, which isn't really an hour because that timer is the whole call we've been on, which included all the prep, thank God. Yeah, right? If you like what you've heard, then please subscribe to this podcast. Feel free to keep coming back for more. We're going to try and do this on a regular basis. If you have questions on this conversation or topics you want to hear again, ping us in the comments on YouTube, tweet us at On the Spot Pod. Anyway, tweet us, find us on Facebook at On the Spot Podcast. Our website is onthespot.tech. Frankly, if you don't like what we had to say, if you disagree with something we said, if you think you can tell it better, this is not a challenge to come at me, bro. This is like a real life. We would love your feedback. I've been doing this for 20 years, Hunter. I don't actually know how long you've been doing this. I guarantee you I'm not the expert. I'm just someone who's seen a lot and implemented a lot and seen some things that work. So please bring us your comments, your questions, your disagreements. And I look forward to talking with you, Hunter, in the future. And I look forward to talking at or potentially with you, the listener.
Also, if you think we're right, don't be afraid to reach out and let us know that you think we're right. And if you've done some of these things in the past, please let us know. It'd be great you know, whole point of community is for y'all to come in to the comments of these things, post on LinkedIn about the things that you've done that have been successful. So please leave feedback about that. If you've got a great case study or an example about how a service implementation of any kind or rollout or how you handle change management that you think went really well, please share it on the community, post it on our podcast where it's shared, or just post it yourself and let people know to help out folks that are having a hard time.
Yes.
All right.
Cool. All right, Hunter, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Until next time.
Until next time.